I suppose we could start just by going around clockwise and asking who you are and a bit of your background. Not an awful lot of information, just
too much information.
Too much information. It's a need-to-know basis. Would you tell me who you are now?
I own a from Dunvegan originally in Skye.
How far away is Dunvegan from Portree?
About 22 miles as the car travels.
And tell me, when you went to school, did you have two languages?
Really, I only had the one, or possibly a bare one and a half. We used English in the house because my father wasn't a Gaelic speaker, though my mother and grandmother would speak in Gaelic, of course, and there was a lot of Gaelic around us. So I would have a lot of words in Gaelic and a few phrases, a number of imperatives. I would say, stop that, sit down, etc. But really, we were English speakers.
And in school, you were taught English as a... For some of the children, it would be a foreign language, wouldn't it, at that stage?
Well, strangely enough, on my class, when we entered primary one, we were all English speakers first and Gaelic speakers second. Though just a couple of years above me, there were quite a number of people who had come into primary one with the bare minimum of English, if any at all.
And moving round to your left there, Iona.
Alice, born and brought up in Brogig in the north end of Skye. Gaelic was my first language and went to school as opposed to learn English and try to learn some other things. Didn't succeed at much of it and enjoyed myself nevertheless once I got out of school.
And when you went to school, Alistair, were you immediately immersed in English? Was it a totally English environment at the time?
Not really. We were fortunate in having two Gaelic-speaking teachers in Deeg School, which I attended. And I think that probably helped, and it helped me develop Gaelic because I was quite fond of Gaelic, and particularly when I went to Staffan Junior Secondary School, I was taken under the wing of a very good Gaelic teacher there, and she took an interest in me, and I was it was something that I fancied and developed quite a bit.
And next to you is another Alistair. Alistair this time.
Yes, I was brought up at Kingsborough, which is about 9 miles from Portree. I was brought up in a Gaelic-speaking community in a Gaelic-speaking home, but oddly enough, I don't remember ever learning English. I suspect it happened during the war when my Glasgow relations, my cousins, were staying with us, so I acquired English painlessly without realising it. And when I went to school, I was definitely bilingual. My first school was Glen Hinesdale, and I was there a few years till it closed, and then we transferred to Kinsale. Both my primary teachers would have had Gaelic because I think they actually both came from, well, one came from Staffan and one came from Kilmaloe, but we had no Gaelic at all. I've never had a Gaelic lesson in my life, and my Gaelic has been, you know, the acquired variety, but I'd never had any formal training in Gaelic. Interestingly enough, Gaelic was certainly the language in Glen Hinesdale of the playground, and we played in Gaelic, and so we did in Kinsale. But before I left Kinsale towards perhaps primary six, certainly primary seven, we had people coming into the school who were English speakers only. And of course, that resulted in English becoming the language of play. And I think that's, I always personally regard that's a very good test of how successful Gaelic medium is. If you hear children playing in Gaelic, definitely working. But if they come out of the classroom and they slip back into English, probably not as effective as it should be.
No, you actually went on and did a degree in English, and you taught English for many years.
Many years.
You'd be in a reasonably good position, Alistair, to tell us about the way in which English is used in the Isle of Skye generally.
Yes, well, I think the first thing to say is that most speakers of English in Skye, particularly those who also have a Gaelic background, incidentally, probably speak a very standard form of English without the inclusion of dialect words, or even in the early days, not too many slang words when they were speaking formally. But as time has gone on, and certainly even while I was still teaching, one was aware of certain influences. Television is a major influence, and people, you know, use things that they hear on television, whether they're catchphrases or, you know, little expressions that appeal to their sense of humor or whatever. And another thing I have noticed in recent times, well, there's two things. One, there's three things. One is the, I was never very good at math, I'm missing.
Tell me both the three things then.
as you probably are aware, I wasn't very good at math. The first one is the one I've just explained, the influence of television. The second, and I've noticed this, funnily enough, quite recently, is the influence of particularly the Glaswegian way of speaking. I was in a restaurant, in a hotel last summer with some people, and we were having a meal, and the waitress, who I know was not Glaswegian, came across and she says, "Are yous ready to order now?" Now, this plural of yous, which I call the George Galloway plural, because you remember when he was speaking to Saddam Hussein, he got into awful trouble for using you, and he said if only he had used the Glasgow plural, he would have been okay. And that, funnily enough, is infiltrated into Skye. And I've heard one or two people who are not much younger than myself using it as a kind of convivial expression. Are yous all doing well, you know, sort of thing. Have you heard that, Yona?
Yes.
More of your generation. And the other thing that I've noticed is, not so much nowadays, I may say, but I noticed it perhaps with people who were more confident in Gaelic than in English, where perhaps they were thinking in Gaelic, and the English expression would sound odd to people's ears because what they were actually doing was transliterating the Gaelic into English. I'll give you one very good example, and this was actually used by a primary teacher who probably should have known better, but it came naturally to her. The expression, building a house. Now, in Gaelic, as you know, tokal can mean to build, and it can mean to lift. Mm-hmm. Now, I heard this lady saying, "I hear they're lifting a new house." Mm-hmm. Have you heard that before?
Yes. And lifting the dinner. Tokal and Genia.
Right.
Would that be common?
I've heard it from a number of people, not in Skye, but in a previous life, I used to mix with people from a lot of the other islands, mm-hmm. and there was a very Gaelic-based English. And another favourite that I heard was for the act of being sick, and it was putting out a kurumab.
Yes, and I think, too, I remember being in the company of Maggie one night and disputing that totally with me. Uh-huh. I had been speaking to Tony in Inverness, and Maggie was saying to him how I thought quite often in Gaelic before I said something. And Maggie came on the scene and said, "Rubbish," she said. "Nobody thinks in another language and says it in yet another language." And I said, "That's not right, Maggie." I said, "I often think in Gaelic, especially if I'm writing." And it's quite interesting that some people, and she's a Gaelic speaker,
of course,
that their perception of it is totally mm-hmm. different from what us three here are putting across.
Mm-hmm. An interesting phenomenon as well, I think, and I'm aware of doing this occasionally myself, and I'm sure you both are as well. If you're talking in English, and you'll suddenly realise that you're groping for a word, and you'll think of a much more expressive Gaelic word to use, mm-hmm. and you might use it. Yes. Now, it's too bad if the person you're speaking to has no idea what you're talking about, but particularly if the other person shares your ability to, jump from one to the other. And I don't know how common this is in other situations or in other languages, but certainly Gaelic English speakers do this.
But who was better at putting that across than Norman MacLean?
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes.
He could
yes.
use Gaelic, English, Spanish, Italian.
Absolutely.
And he could and fit Glaswegian. It in, and everybody understood what he was talking about because he was so brilliant at encapsulating the whole thing.
This is Norman MacLean, the comedian.
Not Kellen MacLean.
No relation.
No, that's right.
Going back to what you just said there, Alistair, an example of a Gaelic word that you might use, a Gaelic word that might be more effective while you're speaking English than yes. the English equivalent.
Well, I'm trying to think of examples I've actually used. If you want to describe your not always very organized, you see. You see, I'm in an awful buruch today. Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly enough, it's words like that which you can find Scots equivalents of as well. Mm-hmm. The first time I said that to somebody who didn't have Gaelic, this person said, what does that mean? And I explained in English, and she says, oh, I would say I'm in a guddle, mm-hmm. which I hadn't heard of at that time, funnily enough. Mm-hmm. Things like that. we sort of latch on, we'll latch on to words occasionally which we like the sound of. I remember when I was a wee boy, it's a very strange example, being given a poetry book at school, and I really liked the sound of some of the words in Horatio at the Bridge, which starts Lars Porsenov, Clunium, to the nine gods he swore, the great house of Tarquin should suffer wrong no more. Now, I had absolutely no idea who any of these people were, but I love the sound of the words. And I think sound is quite important yeah. in language too.
Certainly, buruch is a very expressive word. Would you say onomatopoeic? You're the English scholar.
Yes, it is to a certain extent yes. onomatopoeic, and it creates a visual effect as well as a sound effect, yes. I think. Yeah.
There's another one that they often use in English spoken in the Highlands, which is a word that you probably hear yourself often, Alistair.
Well, you could reverse the trend too, and you could use the word aminacard. That would be one that I would use, you know, which is a word that is quite often used in the Highlands.
Lewis Gaelic,
because it's always mixed up. They can never tell right from wrong. So, however, no disrespect to them.
I was thinking in this case of a Gaelic word which might be used in your instance often, potach.
Potach, oh yes, my own instance, yes. I'm getting older right enough as the days go by.
A potach is an old man in Gaelic, and often used, people just talk about potach.
That's right.
An old potach over there.
And quite often husbands, I can say this safely, not being married myself, husbands refer to their wives, she could only be 29, but she'd be the Cailleach.
Yes.
Which means
the old lady.
Old lady. Yeah. Now, and likewise, I remember being intrigued by this, actually. I think I must have been still in primary school, and we were at a sale of work in Kinsale, and a girl who was at school with me and her brother were looking through some ties, and she said, in Gaelic, she said, we'll buy one of these for the bottach. Mm-hmm. She was talking about her father, who at that time would be perhaps 50, something like that, if that, you know. And I thought, that's funny. I never called my father bottach at that age.
Galler would be one of my favourites. I think Galler, suffering from a bug, I suppose, a virus, galler, whatever, galler is much more expressive.
It sounds much
yes.
more serious.
Oh, it does, yes. You should be in your bed if you have a galler.
Much better than I've got a touch of the cold.
You'll get a doctor's line for that one,
yes,
no problem.
but would you use that in English as well?
Oh, yes, I would use it in English. In fact, I don't think I knew what the English for galler was until I was probably about 15.
Would this be something that other folk would do in Gaelic, or is it just a personal thing with you?
It was certainly a family thing. That was how we described being unwell, suffering from whatever particular illness was going around. Was we had the galler, and that was how we would describe it. We had the galler, whichever one was going around at the time, whether it was chicken pox or a cold.
Yeah. Mm. That's Gaelic for disease, isn't it?
Yes.
G-A-L-A-I-R?
A-I-R, yes.
G-A-L-A-I-R, a galler.
Two L's, is it?
One, I think.
I think we
need to put that right.
Much worse with two L's.
Yes, I think
it is.
You're thinking about something else, Alice.
Oh, you're very sick with two L's in it, I would say.
It's an epidemic proportion.
Oh, I would say.
So, can you think of any other words that come in to Highland English, Island English from Gaelic?
I notice a lot of people putting at the bottom of their emails to me slánche, which you know, the English cheers, but to me a slánche really doesn't go without a drink.
No, exactly.
I think it's quite inappropriate. I think that they think because I work in Gaelic that they ought to put cheers in Gaelic as well, and I have to say, it really just irritates me rather than anything else.
I think dúirc is another one that's used quite a lot now, particularly in emails. Le dúirc dúirc. I see that. Well, I used to see that a lot at work, and even from people who just picked it up as we managed to
train them in what was probably their first language anyway. So they started using Leidhe Gurach.
Which means Alistair.
With the good, kind regards or whatever. That's something like that, isn't it?
I think so, yes.
Yes, with good wishes.
With good wishes.
It's very often little expressions like that that, you know, are not almost as if they're incidental to the conversation when you're talking to somebody. And perhaps, let's say, I was talking to you and our conversation had come to an end, and I might say something like, Gleva,
aye.
Which literally means very good.
Aye.
But the other person might not even understand what that means. Mm-hmm. But it's a kind of punctuation mark that you're using automatically. Just, to, you know, some people spray their conversation with you knows and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a kind of... it's a kind of means of showing that you've concluded what you're going to say and that perhaps that segment of the conversation is at an end and you're quite pleased with the way it's gone. Makaride,
right.
Gleva, very good. They're both very similar in meaning.
The other one of that type of expression that I'm increasingly hearing is maha.
Maha.
Yeah. I was just about to mention that. There's a particular BBC presenter who uses the word a lot. I wouldn't say ad nauseum, but rather overuses the phrase, and sometimes not always in the right place either. Maha is fine when you're saying right maha, you once just right that's it, let's go sort of thing. That's fine, but to pepper one's conversation with it is it's just a little excessive.
It's sometimes used in that situation, I think, by people who don't have Gaelic themselves, but have acquired little phrases, which gives their, their credibility, perhaps, to their knowledge of Gaeldom. I know who you mean.
Yes.
But there are a lot of people living locally who would use maha in English.
Oh, yes, but they would tend to use it just when required, rather than forcibly. Put it into every second sentence.
And what does it mean, actually?
Then, I believe. Well, then. Right, maha. Right then.
Shove is another word that's used a lot. And you can use it to in an English conversation, shove, as giving something to somebody. And it can people understand what you're doing. I think it's a very simple word and one that that a lot of people use if you're using it to them quite often.
Show being here, yep, to give, here. Take, there you are, there you are.
Yeah, that's right.
There you are.
It's funny, I can think of one person, perhaps more than one person, who frequently uses a little expression, usht, which literally means be quiet, hush. Not in a, not at all intended to be offensive or to be aggressive at all. She might be offering you a biscuit and you say, well, no, I couldn't take him out. Usht! You'll have one, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
As if she's dismissing you in feeble protestations.
Yes.
And, you know, there are little phrases like that. Usht is one of them.
Which is kind of equivalent to the wheest in Scots, isn't it?
I suppose, or be quiet, and you don't take that literally. They don't expect you to stop talking or anything. It's a sometimes an expression of surprise.
Yeah.
You tell me something, say, be quiet. You know,
get away.
Can't believe that.
And that would be how would that be spelt in Gaelic?
I would spell it UIST.
I think we're going to be looking at the dictionary when we get out of here. Dwellies is going to get a hammering today. I think there's some new words coming out here.
We've got a list of words that we're going to have a look at now, so we'll do that now, maha.
Influences. When I was teaching, it was certainly perhaps more irritating than it is now. The perhaps spreading, and that's what I meant by the Glaswegian influence, the spreading of the glottal stop. You know, to areas like our own where really there is no place for it. You see. The glottal stop is a kind of curious sound that affects usually the letter T or double T. A word like water, and a Glaswegian would probably say war. So they do something to their windpipe, apparently. You're closing the windpipe and bringing out another sound. And I understand in certain languages, and Arabic is one of them, it's quite important to be able to do that, to get certain sounds. But I found it always slightly irritating when, I don't mind people using the glottal stop in Glasgow, I mean, they've been doing it for a century. But when, you know, when they try to do it in Skye, or when it sort of infiltrates into the conversation and you talk about bar, you know, and...
Interesting, you should say that about the Arabs, because George Galloway seems to have got on really well with them.
That's right. the glottal stop in <isn't> useful.
the glottal stop... In a normal Highland and Island accent, these T's that are missed out with a glottal stop would normally have been stressed. So
absolutely.
It would be water.
We would say water or butter or anything. I mean, I think the effect of knowledge of Gaelic on the English speaker is that you tend to speak every element of the word fairly clearly as well, and you don't tend to, you know, cut off any part of it. And certainly the glottal stop wouldn't normally be heard, although with perhaps younger speakers influenced by, I don't know what, television, footballers, pop stars, you name it, perhaps mates from Glasgow, being in Glasgow on a holiday. But interesting enough, Highland people who live in Glasgow and who perhaps came out of a Gaelic background don't have the glottal stop normally.
We'll just check, since Iona is probably the youngest person among us here.
There is no doubt of that.
I don't know that.
By a long chalk.
Yeah.
We all feel young.
I'm just going to check whether Iona has developed the glottal stop.
Oh, I can't accuse Iona of that.
No, never.
Iona, we're working around clockwise, which is appropriate in the Gaelic circles.
Jaisal.
From Child Soft Shoes Worn for P.E.
Well, I had sand shoes for that, but I also asked some of my colleagues what they would say, and I had jimmies, plimsolls, trainers, and pumps. But sand shoes is what I would say, and what we always wore for gym.
Would you find these others though in Skye? Have you ever heard them used in Skye?
Plimsolls. If we were going to the shop to buy them, we might ask for plimsolls. Yes, but sand shoes would be more likely.
Sand shoes for me too.
When did you buy your first pair of sand shoes?
I don't think I ever bought a pair of sand shoes. But, probably because I wasn't, I hadn't a need to wear them. We hadn't got much sand and stuff, and so.
We'll move back from Alistair's trousers, Alistair.
Right. Well, I don't think I ever called them anything except trousers when I was young. Nowadays, you might perhaps differentiate with different kinds of trousers, like jeans or something like that, because people wear them so often. Apart from trousers and jeans, I can't think of anything else.
Trousers or breekish, that was all.
Breekish is Gaelic.
Yes.
Which gives us the breeks, of course.
That's right.
I had breeks as well, but another family word that we used at home, or my father would use, was winners, because he was Glaswegian and used a type of Glaswegian rhyming slang. So winners and losers were your trousers.
I never heard that one.
No, neither had I.
I used to be asked to press as winners on occasion. Yes.
But that would only be in the household in Dunvegan.
Well, only in the household in Dunvegan, but I'm sure in many, many houses in the Knightswood area.
Clothes in general? Clothes?
Clothes, I didn't really have anything that leapt to mind, but perhaps togs or threads, if we were talking in slang about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's about all we would use as well.
Clothes.
Yeah, clothes.
Pleased.
Well, degrees of being pleased, I suppose. Delighted, very happy, over the moon. Yeah. If you're being slangy, perhaps chuffed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But that's about it.
The same, yeah. Pleased, just delighted I would have you.
Yes, all the ones that Alistair has said, and also made up. I was made up about it, but it's not something I would necessarily use myself. Yes.
My father had a relation who lived down in Midlothian in Pennycook, and she used to come on holiday with us, and I discovered she used a word, very ordinary word to us, in a very different way from us, the word hi, which equals... pleased, very pleased. Yeah. She had been in Skye and she went back with a gift for her neighbour and said she was awfully high about it. And to her, high equals pleased, and it could also mean a bit snooty, you know, somebody being high, you know, nose in the air, which were not forms of, well, not parts of the meaning that we would normally use at all. But the context, as contexts tend to do, explained what she was trying to say. She was awfully high about it.
But that that was a Midlothian word rather than a Skye word.
That wasn't a Skye word at all.
It could be cool, could it not?
Yes.
Cool could be...
Are you showing your age, Alistair? There's a word here, tired. Presumably, there'll be words that you'll be able to come up with for that.
Well, again, degrees of tiredness, like exhausted, worn out. You hear people saying, I'm worn out, I'm tired. But we would use tired normally as the basic word there, yes.
I would use a favourite knackered.
Well, I've got shattered, but a friend of mine from Helmsdale says fiaun, which I think comes from the Gaelic faun, yeah, for weak, fine, tired. Yes.
Yeah.
No, that's interesting.
But she didn't realise she was speaking Gaelic when she used the word.
Fiaun. For tired.
For tired.
But not Skye. That's
She lives in Skye.
She lives in Skye. Yes. Unwell, Eona.
Sick. Got a galler. Somewhere between unwell and tired might be wabbit. It's a word that my mother occasionally uses.
I think that's a Scots word, isn't it?
Probably, yes.
Yes. My mother, perhaps it's something that mothers use with regard to children, a wee bit off colour, just listless.
Washed out.
Yes.
Lacking in energy. Wabbit. Yeah. Alistair?
Poorly. Poorly would be a word we would use, but mainly to describe anything like that. We'd be talking in the Gaelic anyway when we're younger, so... No, it would be poorly, I would say.
Yes. Yeah. Would that be for... Yes, unwell.
Yeah,
unwell. Yeah.
Alistair?
Just what's been said, unwell, sick. Mm-hmm. Poorly, you might, yes.
Under the weather.
Under the weather, yes.
Mm-hmm. Hot?
Hot. Well, again, I find I'm sort of using words giving you degrees of hot. Burning, sweltering, too warm.
That would suit me too.
Roasting, melting,
yeah.
But they're all, as you said, degrees of being hot, yes.
And cold.
And funny enough, I didn't write anything down for cold, and you'd think there would be a million and one words in this part of the world. I suppose freezing, to be emphatic about it.
Yeah. Chilly, I would have for cold.
Right. Nippy.
Nippy, yeah.
These are all ones I would use too, yes.
Annoyed, Alistair.
Annoyed. Well, I would certainly use annoyed as the basic word.
Yeah.
If you wanted, again, to emphasise it, probably colloquially you would say mad. She's really mad about that. She hit the roof. One I heard recently, in fact, describing a mother giving her boy had done something wrong, and the other brother reported it to a friend that she went ballistic.
I wish more of them would go ballistic. Distressed probably would be another one for.
One that I had was, it's a Glasgow word, I'm convinced it's beelin. I was beelin about it, that again, it's not something we would necessarily use in the house unless we were being amusing.
Yeah. Boiling.
Beelin. Is it boiling? Is that where it comes from?
I'm sure
boiling.
I should imagine.
Yes.
And what you do. What you used to do? to throw.
To throw, chuck, fling, fire. Generally, I would throw it.
Cast. You could throw something out to cast.
The fisherman.
Aye, cast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's another one I had.
I haven't got anything new. I would throw or chuck or fling. Yes.
Now, being a retired schoolmaster, you might have something to offer us in this next one, to play truant.
Dogging school, I think, is what people locally used to call it. Don't think I ever did it myself, even as a teacher. But
would that be another word for dodging school?
I think it might be, yes.
So dodging.
Dogging.
Run away would be playing truant, I suppose. You run away from school. So that was the only thing I was thinking of.
We tended to use the expression truanting, and but kids in their own language, I think, would probably talk. Did you hear that? I dogged school yesterday, you know?
She never did.
And when you were dogging school, Iona, what was it you were doing?
I would have been skiving had I ever, done anything like that.
That's right.
But yes, dogging, bunking.
Skiving school.
Skiving school, yes. that certainly in the 70s, one would have skived rather than dogged, but bunking off as well. And another one I hadn't heard until I mentioned it to colleagues was wagging school. I'd never heard that before.
Sleeping.
Sleep generally just to sleep, but out for the count, kip, dos. Also, I think kip and dos are probably Scots origin.
Yeah, snooze. Both you're between sleeping and awakening, but you're still resting, so it's some form of sleep.
Yeah, sleep, dozing, having a nap. That's the only ones I can add to what's been said.
And to play a game, Alistair.
Well, you know this, I could only think of play.
Yes.
He plays football. She plays tennis.
Participate in a game? Maybe that's too big
a
word.
Too highfalutin.
Too highfalutin. Too formal for Sky.
It's a bit formal, yes.
It is, yeah. That's the only one I could think of other than just...
So for folk playing shinty, they would simply play shinty?
Yes. Play shinty, yes. Play football. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, I tried to think of another word for playing as well, and I couldn't. Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah. I think just we just used the standard word for that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And to hit hard?
To belt, to slap, to hammer, to ram, to knock.
Hammer was the only one I put down for that. Then I didn't have much time for this.
You're a pacifist, are you?
Absolutely. Yeah,
I think the only two I can add to Iona's to smash, to thump.
Did you ever hear the word scalp? Did you use that one?
Yes. Scalp.
Yes. Yeah. That wouldn't Clark. Have been to hit hard though, to scalp.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have been a wee slap. Yes.
You used a word there, Alistair. Sklok, which you often hear that
In English.
In English, yes.
It's just the Gaelic really for a scalp.
Yeah.
A sklok. Don't do that, you know, a mother might say, don't do that with my sklokut, I'll give you a small discouraging pat on the head.
So it's not quite hitting hard, but it's
not too abusive.
A Gaelic word that's used often in English, is it sklok?
It's used quite often in English, sklok. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's very effective in English too, and in Gaelic.
Yeah.
Depends who's administering the club. Yeah.
Not so good on the receiving end.
Yes. How would you spell that?
I would spell it S-G-L-E-O-C. Yes.
Sklok.
Sklok. It sounds much sorer than a scalp, I think.
Yes, it's onomatopoeic, definitely that one. Yeah. and possibly so is what the receiver will yelp out.
Left-handed, Alistair.
That's the only expression I think I've ever heard used in normal English anyway. There are Scots words for left-handed, but not used in this part of the world, I don't think.
No.
Well, I had Kerak, which of course is the Gaelic for a left-handed person, and I do tend to use that in English, but I've heard my sister quite often saying that her children are corrie-fisted, they're left-handed.
Yeah, I've heard that, but it's again not Scotch.
It's Scots, yes.
Although I think corrie might have a relation, it might be related to Kerak. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It probably is.
The carers apparently tended to be left-handed. The people called carers tend to be, and care of course it comes from car, which is left-handed.
Wrong. And it means wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Sinister.
Sinister. Sinister.
And attractive.
Well, I had difficulty really with unattractive, because we don't have an awful lot of words for unattractive here, I don't think. But I did manage to get a couple. Ugly, plain, a face only a mother could love, but that there wasn't really a word that leapt to mind as being something I would use for unattractive.
I just had ugly as well, so it seems to be quite universal around here.
Again, I agree. Ugly is the only one really that I could think of that would be normally used in formal English anyway. There might be slang words you know.
You would never be bold enough to use it.
I wouldn't dare even suggest.
We might think it.
Not a phenomenon that you'd recognise yourself, Alistair, lacking money, but did you have a word for it?
Oh, yes, broke. That's the only one I had down, but I think it describes it very well. If you're broke, you have no money.
Yes, they would use that here, certainly, and they would probably also import the, I think it's the Scots word, skint, and perhaps the more formal English word, short. I'm short this short. Month.
Well, not quite.
Yes, well, I had poor, skint, short, strapped for cash, yeah. And brassic, of course, again, the going back to the rhymings slang, brassic, lint, skint.
That's from Glasgow, is
that's it? Probably.
It's going back a long way, that.
And again, something we will not recognise in this company, drunk.
Oh, I didn't have any words for that at all. No, I'm lying. Tiddly, pissed, steaming, stoches, jaked, plastered, mortal. I could go on.
Why don't you?
I didn't have room to write any more down, actually.
Alistair's jaws dropping further and further to the floor.
Well shot. That's one that would be used in the Highlands. Mm-hmm. You've heard that one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I've heard all the ones Iona has recalled, but Smashed, I think, is the only other one.
Smashed, yeah.
Formally under the influence, of course, but that'd be very formal, probably in a court appearance.
There's one that I used to hear, I think, possibly as a result of the influence of people like Billy Connolly and things like that, miraculous.
Oh, yes.
Did you use that?
No, but I like it.
Yes. I've heard it used.
Here?
Not here, when likes of Liverpool, I've heard it used. A few miraculous people around there. So.
Yeah, I can't honestly have heard it here, but yes, I would recognise it if somebody used it.
Yes.
Drunk? Oh, we've done that. Sorry. Pregnant.
Pregnant. Well, pregnant itself, obviously. Expecting. Mm-hmm. That's about the only two I can think of.
On the way would be another description. That's the one I've got here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, expecting is probably what I would use, but also in the club or bun in the oven. Mm-hmm. Up the duff is a rather coarse term for it.
In Skye.
Yes, even in Skye. I've heard it in Skye.
Probably acquired from other areas, of course.
Yeah, of course.
It's come in.
Billy Connolly again.
And attractive, Alistair?
Bonnie. Attractive itself. Nice looking. Glamorous, even. Something like that, yeah.
Alistair. I would use these as well, and good looking would be just the ones, and the ones that Alistair has used already.
And we'll now talk to the most attractive.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll just describe myself, cracker. Yeah. But again, my sister also has a term that she uses for an attractive male, which is a TM, which is a tricky man. Tricky man, yes. Which she's used since her days in university in Glasgow, which is probably the last time she saw one.
A TM.
TM.
Yes. I don't know that one, obviously, but can't say I've ever heard that one.
Yeah. It's certainly not being applied to me, anyway. One I used to hear in the further west was Brammer.
Brammer, yes.
Did you come across that?
Yes, I thought that was a Glasgow word, particularly a Brammer.
I thought it was a Lewis word, actually. Yeah, the Lewis talk. Lewis people use it.
Yes.
Brammer.
Mm-hmm. Is it not from the Gaelic?
What Gaelic?
I think that's a Gaelic word the Yosas have used.
And it's used, you sound surprised that they occasionally use a Gaelic word. It would only be used off a woman, though, mm-hmm. Brammer.
Yes.
Yes. I don't know, there is no male equivalent, is there? Apart from your.
Cunyach Mór.
The TM.
Mórach. Calls Cunyach Mór a Brammer sometimes.
Does she? Oh, I don't know that.
Yeah. I also thought that the Gaelic word meant more of a boyfriend, girlfriend.
Oh,
rather than just an attractive person. That it was somebody with whom you would be having a relationship. But
not necessarily.
No, right.
No, not necessarily.
I wouldn't have thought so. I would recognise it being used just as a general term. Oh, Ket the Brahmin, look at these very nice-looking young females, you know. Yes.
Okay. But would you hear it in English ever? Would people use it?
Yeah. They might insert it into an English sentence if two Gaelic speakers were talking, you know, they might say, oh.
But they certainly use it in Lewis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in English, speaking in English, they would use a Brahmin.
Brahmin, yes.
But not Skye. That's not.
Not normally. No.
Skye. In scene.
Again, I had a number for this one. There was mad, nuts, luby, cuckoo, crackers, and an expression I heard from again one of my colleagues, which was "there's wiser eating grass."
That's quite like one.
Yes. He's from Inverness originally. So.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite a nice expression.
Oh yes, yeah. A good one. Off your head. It's another one, another way to put it. But I'm glad I didn't do much work here because you two seem to have done an awful lot.
Well, all the ones Iona used right enough, plus another Glaswegian one, I think, is "not the fool shilling."
Mm. Aye.
And I had it's a longer expression, but it's the same idea that the lift doesn't go all the way to the top floor. Which is a very unkind statement, the fool shilling is, you know, we've got to make allowances. He's not the fool shilling, you know.
Well, working in traditional music as I do, yeah. Somebody came up with the expression "one song short of a ceilidh," which was quite nice.
One I really liked was there's a gentleman in the west of Skye who lives in a big building. A big edifice, and he at one point was trying to sell a part of Skye for a lot of money, mm-hmm. and he was described by local worthy here Tommy McKenzie as being a couple of turrets short of a castle.
Oh yes.
But I think that was just a Tommyism.
Highlanders are pretty quick at writing things.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. Moody.
I had Gurney. And having a boos on, but again, I think that's a Scotticism. Is it more Gaelic? Boos. Boos, of course, yes, yes.
These are things you would use, though?
Yes, oh yes. I would use them in English, yes.
And people would understand you quite easily?
I hope so. They've never said that they didn't, yes.
I suppose droll, maybe that would be strange rather than moody, but... Yeah.
That's the one you often hear in English in the islands, droll. Yes,
mm-hmm.
But more unusual, more strange, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, but moody, I suppose you could call it deep. Somebody's not communicative. That's the only thing I could think of.
Well, the only other one I can think of is up and down. You know, somebody whose moods are unpredictable. Really, you'd say, oh, he's up and down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to rain lightly?
Drizzle, spitting sometimes. That's about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's all I've got as well. Drizzle is all I've got.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had damp, I suppose, in just describing the sort of day that we normally have in Skye. That would still be raining lightly, but not as heavily as it might.
Mm-hmm. I remember coming off the ferry at... Tarbert it was, and it was one of these days. Rain was coming horizontally, being propelled by a force 10 gale from the northwest, and this fellow, whose coat was just black, it had been turned black because of the rain, he sort of nodded a friendly greeting at me and said, "Ha damp." It's damp. That was an understatement.
That's a favourite.
But I think that gales would use damp for something more than what the word damp means in English.
Yes.
They use it in a sarcastic way too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's when it's chucking it down, they say, "Hey, damp," and you...
Like your friend in Tarbert.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, yes.
They're laughing at the weather, in fact.
What else can you do?
That's right.
There are a number of English words that are used in Gaelic that have a slightly different meaning what did I say? English words used in Gaelic, which have a slightly different word from the English usage. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, if you described a man, ha comic, he's not comic. He's something else, isn't it, Alistair?
Well, he could be quite a comedian. He could be somebody who walks funny. Mm. He could be somebody who is quick-witted. Mm-hmm. There's many ways you could describe. Mm-hmm. Somebody like that being comic.
Yes, I think I know what Kellen means, though. You mean he has all these things, absolutely true, but slight extension of meaning that he's sort of not abnormal, but unusual in some way, comic, eccentric.
Yes, and fancy is another word.
Yes.
I've heard people saying and using it in Gaelic, fancy. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of unusual. Mm-hmm. And the other one, which is where we're talking about English words being used in Gaelic, mm-hmm. is clever. Mm-hmm. You know, the word, you would say, "Hi, clever." You know, it's quick rather than being clever.
Yes.
But apparently, Alistair, you'll know this, that the originally, clever was used for something that was quick, rather than something that was bright.
That was right, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, it's always interesting to go back to the origin of words and try and find out why. You know, take an example like, silly, which nowadays has this idea of not being wise. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, why would they have called the Scilly Isles the Scilly Isles? They wouldn't have called it the Scilly Isles for being daft. And silly originally meant happy, blessed.
Yes.
And the way the meaning has changed is that somebody who was perhaps not the fool shilling, as we were talking about earlier, might be going around unnaturally happy. We can all think of people in our own environment who might that could be described like that. Mm-hmm. So gradually, silly acquired happy, but not quite, you know, fully normal, being slightly short of one or two cells. And it then silly moved from being happy to being foolish. Mm-hmm. And the modern version has stuck at that. Another good example is the word villain, which today we know villain means somebody who's capable of doing pretty awful things. And yet the original meaning of villain was quite a neutral word, meaning a farm labourer. Mm-hmm. And the reason that word took on a slightly more sinister meaning was that at the time of the agricultural revolution, lots of people lost the ability to work on the land. They came into the city in hordes and were looked on as suspicious, liable to, the way perhaps some people might look on gypsies nowadays, liable to either threaten them or steal some of their possessions. So villain from being simply a person who worked on the land became a person who had to be watched because he was capable of doing something. Mm-hmm. So the way words change their meaning is really very interesting.
Mm-hmm. So getting back to
what we're supposed to be doing.
What's a guy? Any words for a digression? Or
as somebody once asked DR, you know, proving that, of course, modern Gaelic doesn't have a lot of good words for technical terms. I remember somebody asking DR in the staff room, DR, what's the Gaelic for television? And DR said, what's the English for television?
And he was right.
He was right.
Absolutely.
Somebody gave me a good Gaelic for television, but this is another digression. It was Jalavoshan.
Jalavoshan.
Not bad.
Box in the corner.
The picture in the corner. The main room of the house with a TV.
Well, I suppose the living room, the lounge, some people would say, I think I would still say living room. Lounge has a slightly more, a slightly posher sound to it somehow.
Do you have a lounge up in Bemoor, do you also?
No, just a guddle. Sitting room, we would call it. Mm-hmm. Sitting room. Yeah. And in the old days, we didn't have a sitting room. We just had the kitchen where everybody sat around the fire, on the open fire. Mm-hmm. So it's changed from a kitchen to a sitting room. That's what we would still call it.
Sitting room, I would say as well. That's what we would have.
We had, when I was a boy, we had a exactly the same as yourselves, the kitchen and everything happened in the kitchen. But there was the room, which nobody ever used, of course, except the minister when he came for tea. And when I was a wee boy, I simply called it room of minister, the minister's room. It didn't belong to us at all. We never used it.
We didn't have that luxury, though. We had the...
This sounds like the Monty Python sketch about the wooden boxes.
We had the thatched house, and there was only three rooms in it in total. Right. And the kitchen was used for everything.
Of course.
For eating and relaxing in and warming yourself at the fire.
The hub of the house.
The hub of the house, yeah.
Also making a hell of a noise with that paper.
That's because you're not going fast enough. I've got all my words written out and you haven't done a thing about it.
Anything to add on the lounge? Did you have a lounge?
No, we didn't have a lounge. I've never had a lounge. Always a sitting room. My grandmother had a front room again, where one would entertain, and it was opened at New Year and that sort of thing. But the television was in the kitchen.
And it would smell of furniture polish.
Yes, that's right. And damp, and geraniums. Yes.
Running water, smaller than a river.
Stream, burn. Are the two words that I would normally use, yeah.
I just use the one, burn.
Burn. You wouldn't use a stream?
No.
Yeah. Yes, burn I've got, and stream I would agree with too, yes, yes.
I would use stream, but burn more.
So burner seems to be the one that's burn. Used here. The long, soft seat in the main room.
Sofa. Couch, perhaps, but sofa is the one I would use, yeah.
Bench. Mm-hmm. That's another one. That used to be the old style, the bench.
The wooden one. The
wooden bench, yeah. A chaise, as we called it.
That wouldn't be necessarily soft, would it? Or...
Definitely.
No, but then we were quite well padded. So we were quite comfortable in it.
You brought your own cushions to the Kayleigh. <Absolutely. Kayleigh.
laughs> I would say a couch, but my grandmother certainly had a chaise that... Probably went back to the 1930s. Yes.
And describe a chaise.
A chaise to me was actually a couch because it did have padding, not a great deal. And I think the horse that was originally used to pack it was still very much in evidence.
But that wouldn't be a word that's used colloquially nowadays, chaise.
Chaise. Well, it would be certainly amongst my own family and. I think any Gaelic speaker would probably think of a chaise before they thought of a couch or a sofa. Mm-hmm.
Interesting where that word came from now, the chaise. Would that have come from the chaise lounge?
Could be, actually.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just wondered because it is a word that was very common in the Highlands at that time. Yes, and I just wondered, was it related to the... Because that's French, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The long...
Yeah.
Literally long chair.
Long chair, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the one we had was a wooden bench with two ends in it. And
yes. We had one of those too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The bengi, was that the way you called it at all?
No.
Chaise.
Did you call it a chaise?
Yeah.
The wooden bench.
I've been trying to tell you that for the last 5 minutes.
Yes, well, I agree with them about that, yes.
Yes.
Perhaps that was the North Sky way of doing it.
Probably was.
Anyway, it's not used often in English. It's a Gaelic word, yeah.
It would be a bench in English, I think.
A bench.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A settle.
A settle.
Yeah,
wooden one.
Another word,
yes. Wooden one would be a
settle. Nowadays, you'd only find it as garden furniture or something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The narrow walkway between or alongside buildings.
I wasn't quite sure what that meant. Pavement, path, something like that.
I could lane in. I don't know if that's relevant or not. Mm-hmm. And between two buildings, you could have a lane.
I wasn't quite sure what was being asked for that. No.
I had alley. That was what I was thinking of, narrow.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a narrow walkway or driveway between two.
The one that I thought about immediately there was close. Did you use close at all?
I thought of close, but to me a close would be covered. And I didn't get the impression that this was a covered walkway at all. I thought it was just
that was back to your Edinburgh days.
And then you could use gangway as well, as something going between two buildings.
A gangway?
Yes, you could do. Mm. Yeah, although it's used more in airports and shipping terminals, you could use gangway as well.
Was that the original?
I don't know, but it is a word that you could use there, depending on what context this is in.
Yeah.
but not often heard in Skye gangway for that. In fact, there aren't too many narrow walkways between buildings anyway.
No, but you could use it in the likes of a harbour. You could have a gangway going between two buildings if it was over water, which can happen.
Alistair, toilet.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. Toilet, I think, is probably the commonest one in use today. But in earlier years, going back to my own boyhood, they would probably talk about the lavatory, which I believe is the you way, if you were if it was very important for you to use the correct terms. You know, if you were the Duke of Devonshire or something like that, you would never talk about the toilet. That's very common. Not that he would say common. Well, what else do we use? Bathroom, I suppose.
People, closet.
A closet.
They bake. Yeah, but the closet was a word that was used.
Yeah, the water closet.
Water closet, yeah.
In English.
In English, yes.
Yeah. The closet. Although I think that would be perhaps a bit dated even in my own day. Mm-hmm. But you then go into the field of slang, of course, which Iona's the expert on. You talk with important things like the bog, the clutch. The
like the winners.
Yes. Okay, given that cue, let's move over to Iona.
Well, I do have Lou, Bog, John, Dunny. A number of my colleagues are from out with the area. Lou would probably be what I'd normally say myself, but...
That seems to have taken over from the others, actually. Lou is becoming universal now, and I think that's the influence of TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder where that is. Is it Waterloo?
It comes from the French. Yes, from the French.
Is it?
Yes. Yeah. Gardelou.
Oh, right. Yes,
Gardelou. The water connection.
The water connection, yeah. There's something...
You made that one up very quickly.
So, something that we were not too used to in the Skye, raining heavily.
Pouring, lashing down... That's the only two I can think of.
Oh, I did. That's enough to suggest it's coming down quite heavily, I would say. Yeah.
Bucketing, torrential, stair rods. Cats and dogs, raining cats and dogs. Bucketing, probably what I would.
I've got a weather station, and when it rains heavily, a ticker tape comes across the bottom. It's now raining cats and dogs. And when the wind comes up, it starts saying, hold on to your hats. That's on a proper weather station, comes up with this message. So there you go.
I used to use that expression, teaching metaphor, raining cats and dogs.
Baby.
Wee one. Bab, Nipper, Sprog, Wayne, Bairn. Wee one. Baby is the most common one that I would use.
A baby is the one we would use as well, because I think it's a correct way to describe a wee one, and a bit more respectful than all these fancy words that are being used here.
Child. Interesting enough, I think wee one is another good example of a direct translation from Gaelic.
Chivik.
I heard quite recently, in fact, I overheard a conversation with two men, and obviously one asked, you know, how's the family? And he said, and they were talking English, and he said, oh, Joan and the wee ones are away. They're in Glasgow at her mother's or something like that. But that's definitely one we do use. I don't know how much that's used in other parts of the country. Wee ones equal children.
I suppose Wayne's is wee ones, the same.
Yes. Wayne's, I would think of Glaswegian English for Wayne, certainly. But it's something I would use, again, in jest, really. I wouldn't use it in a serious conversation. But wee ones would be one of my favourites.
And a young person in cheap, trendy clothes and jewellery. Cheap, trendy clothes.
I hadn't a clue what to write down for that. I was never wore cheap, trendy clothes and jewellery. I was never a teenager. But I had to ask a friend of mine who does have teenagers, and she had Ned and Scaff. And a Ned, to me, wouldn't be necessarily a young person in that sort of style. A Ned would be probably a young person just on the... slightly on the wrong side of the law.
And a scaff?
Scaff, I have no idea where that comes from. Scaff.
Is that used in Skye?
Well, apparently it's used in Portree High School. No, it certainly wasn't in my day, and not in Alistair's.
Completely at a loss with this one.
Well, if I can't think of a noun at all, young person, and cheap, trendy. Yeah. I mean, I can think of adjectives like trendy or wee phrases like in the fashion, fashionable and so on, but I cannot honestly think of a word which equates to Iona's scarf. That's new in me too. You know?
Female partner.
Well, wife, partner, woman, lady, other half, better half, girlfriend, all these I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard them all, but I don't know which one would be right. My own case would be just the wife.
The wife, yeah. Or as Terry
or the old lady.
Or as Terry Wogan would say, the present Mrs. And when asked, why does he always talk about the present Mrs. Wogan, he says, to keep her on her toes. Yeah.
And you just called the wife? The wife.
The wife, or the old lady, I suppose, if you were speaking to somebody else about her. Yeah. She's a lot younger than I am. But.
I would tend to use wife, whether or not they were actually married. It doesn't say that they're necessarily living together, this female partner. But one I've heard a lot, again, from my Glasgow friends, is bidey in.
Right.
Somebody who lives in the... Yes.
Precise.
Before, living together was an acceptable social custom. Bidey in is quite a derogatory term for the partner living in the house with somebody else.
Is that a word that you'd hear in Skye and would be understood in Skye?
Oh, yeah, I think it would be understood in Skye. I doubt if it'd be heard in Skye. It wouldn't be used in that sense in Skye. I don't think there is an equivalent one in Skye that...
It never happened.
I heard it for the first time in Aberdeen, actually, bidey in. And, well, they certainly used bide for living.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it did make...
Bide a while. Bide a wee, I would say.
Bide a wee. Well known in Ayrshire anyway, because Helen uses it quite freely, because that's she was down in Ayrshire for a while, so I think that's where she picked it up.
Bidey in for partners.
Quite a handy term, actually.
Oh, if very descriptive too.
Yes, it is. If you're not quite sure what the relationship is.
A kit of tools.
Toolkit, that's... It's all right.
Tool bag. Absolutely. Toolkit is the only thing I've got here. Tool bag, toolkit, nothing else.
Yes, I've got tool bag and workbox as well. That's all I could think of. Yeah. Workbox, to me, sounds a bit more feminine, perhaps, than a kit of tools that a builder might use.
In.
Yes. Your briefcase.
Could have been on that, remember.
That was all I could think of for kit of tools.
So a word for something whose name you've forgotten.
Well, I do have a fairly dodgy memory these days, and I came up with thingamy, thingamy jug, jig, whatchamacallit, a doodah, and a hoojicum flip.
The last one?
Hoojicum flip. Hoojicum flip.
Is that one?
I didn't know how to spell any of them.
Tell me, the hoojicum flip, is that something that came through your father's line?
I seem to think it was more my mother that came up with the hoojicum flip. Yes,
I think that more than exhausts my thingamajigs.
Yes, I agree. The what you call it thing and the thingamajig I've got, and what's his name?
Grandfather.
I never met any of my own grandfathers, but Grandad, Shenner, Jen, my Barra friends call their grandfather. J-E-N, Papa, Gammy, Grampy. That was all I could...
Shenner, why Shenner?
Shenner, grandfather for... Gaelic for grandfather. And Jen, of course, is a contraction of that as well.
Yeah, that's, again, adequate. And Grandpa would be, and Shenner would be the ones that we would use as well.
Shenner seems to be quite common, in quite common usage. It's the Gaelic for... Yeah. Grandfather.
I think it has found a sort of acceptability among non-Gaelic speakers as well. They've heard it and liked the sound of it,
yes.
And
yes.
Sometimes use it, yes, Shenner.
Mm-hmm. How's that spelled, Alistair?
Well, I've no idea. S-E-A-N, two N's?
Yeah, one N.
Yair.
Shenner. S-E-A-N-E-I-R for grandfather. Certainly.
An old man, really.
That's right.
You're not a grandfather yet, Alistair.
Not yet. I don't want to be for a while.
Certainly my own father, he was by his grandchildren, he's always called Shenner.
Yes.
And and also some of my mother's brothers, they were also called Shenner.
There seem to be fewer words, you see, I think, this is one of the reasons, fewer words for a grandpa. Plenty of words for a grandma, like Nana and various other versions of grandma and things. There would seem to be fewer words for grandpa, so Shenard possibly is a useful addition to the possibilities.
Interestingly enough, the female equivalent of Shenard is rarely, if ever, used in English.
Would you agree,
Arthur? Shenard. I think so. I don't think I've ever heard it used by non-Gaelic people. Shenever.
No.
Friend. Alistair. Also.
Right. Well, friend mostly, pal, mate. These are the ones I would think of from my own younger days.
Yes, very much the same. I think friend would be the one that would be used as much as any. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pal, I would tend to use myself, but also mate, chum, crony, I think is a word my father would have used. And mucker and buddy are probably imports from elsewhere. Yeah.
Mm. It's interesting, actually, looking at my younger relatives, cousins, children, things like that, say student age, that sort of thing. They make a nice distinction between, boys who have girlfriends and boys who have female friends who are not romantically attached to them at all. They distinguish between a girlfriend and a mate.
Yeah.
And you can have female mates, might be a flatmate or something like that, who with whom you have no romantic entanglements, but it's a good friend. And whereas the girlfriend is a different breed altogether, sort of thing. But I find that interesting that they make that distinction because somebody... I actually heard one of them saying somebody, in fact, was mother, more or less asking, is Sheila your girlfriend? No, she's just a mate.
Right. Not as hot-blooded as we were.
They were all girlfriends.
Oh, absolutely.
There were no mates. But mate, of course, also normally means, traditionally meant somebody that you were linked with. You see, this is my mate.
That's right.
I would always assume a mate to be masculine.
But I noticed that with my own kids. They're not kids now, but they've got referred to them as mates. And
that's right. Yeah. Either sex.
Either sex, very much so.
That's right.
And they share flats with them and they don't care.
Right. That's right.
Whereas,
without being by the ends.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's the wonderful thing about it.
Yes.
And it took a while for me to.
Get your head around it.
Absolutely. Great. Who's that, Kellens?
Grandmother. Alistair.
Well, grandmother, a granny, gran, nana, which is not one I used when I was at that age myself. Gran, I think, is... I don't ever remember calling my grandma anything because she was... very elderly when I was very young, and I never met my other grandma, but I think I just referred to her as grandma, Shenever, in Gaelic. I really can't remember.
No, it was granny we always referred to, and we were very young too when my granny died, both grannies. So it was always granny.
I certainly referred to both my grannies as granny, and my nieces, some of them call their other granny Nana.
Yes.
But it's not as common.
No, but I think what happens, I know from one family of my own cousins that one grandma is called Nana and the other one is called Gran, so that they know who they're talking about.
Yes.
And this is quite a convenient way of doing it, actually. Yeah. I don't know if there's any seniority than the nomenclature at all, or, you know...
Depends on how much they give out.
How you achieve the status of gran or nan, or who is more affectionately called. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't dare look into that.
My other nieces, well, niece and two nephews, call their respective grandmothers Granny Morag and Granny Clarice.
Yes.
So
yes,
they get equal, equal shouts.
That's
yes.
a good way of doing it. Yeah.
And mother?
Mum is what I call my own mother. Mummy, when I was younger.
Yeah. Very much the same. And Maher in Gaelic, obviously. But that would be all. It would be mum or mummy.
Mummy?
Yeah, mummy.
Mm-hmm. I agree entirely. I think when I remember saying mummy when I was very young.
Yeah.
But then as you sort of got older, mm-hmm. you felt a bit... you know, this sounds a bit childish, so you then probably again the influence of well, Mike is radio rather than anything else, or perhaps other people using the word mum.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh yes, I like the sound of that, and it became mum.
Mm-hmm.
One word that I often heard when I was brought up in South Youth, they wouldn't say mummy, they'd say mammy.
Mammy, mm-hmm. yes.
That's what we would use too, and that you would say, I'm going to tell my mammy about you, if you were getting somebody who's giving you a hiding.
Yes.
And that would, in English, it would be mammy as well.
Mammy, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, very much so.
I think that's probably the case with myself as well. It was mammy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember... the day I changed from calling my mother mummy to the day I decided to try mum for a change. And it went unremarked. I don't know if it went unnoticed, but I felt it was a bit of a rite of passage. I'd suddenly become a teenager.
How old were you then?
Yes. I think I was 12. Right. Yes. Right. Yes. Right. I thought yes, I would risk it.
Yeah. I think that's us gone through all the words that were there.
Who's the male?
It's just been pointed out to me that we didn't do male partner. Iona?
I would tend to use husband again, whether or not there was an actual marriage, boyfriend, I suppose.
Vodachnada, maybe. Yes, husband or partner would suffice for me as well.
Bodachgrant is never used. It means a horrible old man.
Yes, agreed. Man, partner, possibly if it was such, boyfriend, which sometimes equals partner as well. Man, partner, boyfriend, yes, that's it.
Into earlier was that the emphasis has always been on good English. And where it was taught, it was good plain English that we were taught. And it very much carried on throughout our lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while to teach us the English, but then when they did teach us the English, we seemed to have grasped it. And the accent has always been quite straightforward. And I think when I find that particularly pointed is when you meet some foreigners and you start talking to them, they say that our speech is much slower than that of people in the central belt, and that they can understand us a lot more clearly than they can in the rest of Scotland. And I've often found that quite interesting.
Mm.
I've spoken to many people from all over Europe, and when you're trying to discuss something with them and they haven't got a lot of English, it's very easy, I think, for them to understand what we're saying, because we tend to speak rather slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, I agree entirely with that. I've had the same experience with, you know, you might give a hitchhiker a lift or something like that. And they often make that point that they find you much easier to understand than people either in England or in the rest of Scotland. And I think it is for the reasons that Alistair stated, that particularly the older generation among... whom I class myself, of course. You know, we had fewer influences to influence our pronunciation. And the only influence I can think of that influenced my pronunciation, if it did, would be radio. We didn't even have television. I mean, I was about 12, I think, when we got our first radios, at 11 or 12. And you didn't hear any voices except those within your own community. Mm-hmm. And the main English speakers you heard were either in school mm-hmm. or in church.
Yeah.
And both of these would be speaking standard English. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I suppose, we have fewer non-standard expressions than you might get in other parts of the world. But I think the influences now on young people in this part of the world. And the other thing you have to remember, of course, is that there's been a huge number of people from other areas of the UK coming into...
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a story from Falkirk, apparently.
Well, it's a story from Dunvegan, really, but we used to have some friends from the Falkirk area who used to come up and stay with us every year in the summertime. And they had a very, very strong accent, very strong central Scots accent. And Sandy had been playing outside and came running in, very windy day, came running in and he said to my mother, "Your teacher's found doing your clays in the grun." And we all looked at the poor boy blankly, and he repeated himself again, "Your teacher's found doing your clays in the grun." And we were still making absolutely nothing of it. We had to say, "Right, slow it down, Sandy, and your streachers fan dun and your clays are on the grun." So, "Oh, right, we've got it now. It meant your clothes pole has fallen down and your clothes are on the ground." And he just stomped his foot and looked so put out and said, "You said, oh, too polite."